If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there were so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, it's points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content that you have come to expect. Today's guest is carving out a unique niche for himself in jiu-jitsu through his forward-thinking approach to jiu-jitsu culture and community. Jeff Serafin joins us to discuss how he has built both his team and community through that approach, why he wants his students to tap him out, why a great instructor should never hold anything back from their students, and what the future holds for Serafin Jiu-Jitsu. Here is the Roll Radio with four-time Fight to Win Pro Super Fight winner, coach and instructor, third-degree black belt under Jack McVigor and Megaton Diaz, and owner of Serafin Jiu-Jitsu, Jeff Serafin.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Here we go.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm good. I'm looking forward to today.
I know. I figured you
would. Our guest has a lot of responsibility going on for today's podcast and what you and I do, and the fact that you have to sit here with me and all of that. So, I want it to go positively, so I won't talk about it too much.
Well,
but it's all Jeff's fault.
I think, well, first of all, Jeff, welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the show. Jeff, do you know that Gary is here because of you, that he trains because of you? I don't know I know the story, but I don't even know if you know that story.
Yeah, he has told me, which is makes it awesome. You know, I love jiu-jitsu, obviously, and I love getting people involved and with good people. So it's always great to hear. If I can help somebody get on this road and change their life with jiu-jitsu and make the community bigger.
Let me make this clear. You, because of you, I'm stuck with him now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the bottom line.
And this is the last time you guys ever spoke.
But Jeff, when...
Yeah, we have to throw out our... Ahead. We have to throw out our friend Craig yes. Fass, who is the in-between, who actually will be coming into town from Portugal.
Oh, beautiful. I didn't know he was coming in. That's awesome. Yeah, I reached out quick. I'll make it super short. I reached out to two people who trained in the city when I moved out to the suburbs. I was looking to start something new. One of them trained under Jeff, who was Craig Fass, and the other is Christian, who trained under Pete the Greek. And both of them got back to me within a minute to say to try Roll and one other academy. And here I am today, 7 years later, something like that. So thank you.
But this also creates an interesting point of a conversation, how small the jiu-jitsu world is. And I think, you know, today, you know, Jeff, you and I, we've been on the mat for a long time. But today, I think... Yeah. The positive saturation of jiu-jitsu academy is so large that it's difficult to not to find an academy nearby you, right? But 7, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the world was very different back then, wasn't it?
Very, very, very different. You know, I know when I started, I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, not far from where you guys are now in Lansing. And I wound up training in Schererville, Indiana, across the state line. And it took about 30 minutes to get the academy I was at. It was the closest place. And I was 15, so I couldn't even drive. My parents had to drive me a half hour each way, hang out for an hour and a half while I trained, and then drive me back at night. Now, you know, you're going to find five or six places closer than that one. But yeah, 1998, you did not have a lot of options to train.
Is that a positive, or is that you know, consequence of the growth in a not so positive way? We often talk about on the show about this. You know, is the jiu-jitsu growth a good thing? I mean, everyone wants jiu-jitsu to be big, but there is the other side of growth, which is not always viewed that way. You know, what are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I think it's positive. And there's always the worry about it becoming McDojo,
right.
You know,
right.
That you're going to get people who are black belts running gyms that don't know what they're doing. But the problem, honestly, there were guys back in the 90s and early 2000s who didn't know what they were doing. They were running academies and people didn't have other options. So they're almost forced to train with those guys and they didn't have somebody else to go try. So now you come to my gym and you don't like my gym. There's five other good gyms and maybe they like the atmosphere better, the schedule better. They have a bigger striking program, whatever they want on top of the jiu-jitsu, they have that option. And of course, there's going to be some people out there who are a little bit more nefarious, who haven't got there or bought their belts or whatever. But the good schools are going to be the majority and more people are going to have good access. And if you wind up going to one of those not so great schools and you find somebody closer, be like, man, something feels off. Or, you know, from what my friend who trained somewhere else, this doesn't sound like the same thing. You have those five other schools where back then, you know, if you're in the middle of somewhere, you have a half hour, 45 minute drive and that school's not good. What else do you do?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to really help, even though there are always going to be some negatives. Overall growth is going to be good for us.
Yeah, and I mean, you do bring up a good point. That, you know, way back in the day, 20 years ago, it like there was how many? I mean, how many in Chicago? Five?
Maybe. Back then, you remember most of these, a lot of these gyms were just MMA, NHB
right.
gyms. They weren't really
right.
jiu-jitsu gyms. Because like we would cross-train, the few guys we would like cross-train with, were just fighters who had like a garage and they would beat each other up and they wanted to come do some jiu-jitsu a couple days. And they were really just like tough guys in the gym. They weren't really at school. They weren't a jiu-jitsu academy. So actual jiu-jitsu academies, yeah, you had a handful. Jeff Curran, Carlson mm-hmm. Gracie, Jeff Neal's place in Aurora, mm-hmm. where I started at Bravo Corrals in Northwest Indiana. There were a tiny amount of gyms. And Chicago was a big city. And even in Chicagoland, there were barely any. So.
Yeah. And I mean, today, very different world, right? Not only in Chicago, local to here, but, you know, all around the country and even around the world. I mean, I think it's difficult not to find a if you are in a major city, it's difficult not to find a jiu-jitsu, especially with popularity of the sport and of the art and, you know, with big advocates like Joe Rogan and others. I mean, we can just talk about this million different ways, right? But like that growth is very visible. And have you noticed that growth in that positive way at your academy where you teach, in the sense of that people are seeking out that jiu-jitsu curiosity?
Yeah, I think so. Like we're getting a lot of new people. We constantly, you know, I've been lucky that being in Evanston, Illinois, I'm just north of Chicago. We have a major university, Northwestern. So we get a lot of kids from all over the country and world coming in, and we have a lot of people coming in. And, you know, back when I started, even at teaching, not only just training about 15 years ago, a lot of people, you had to sell them on jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. You had to be like, explain what jiu-jitsu was. They don't know what this is. Maybe a friend told them about it, or they come into a gym because I taught at a gym that had other stuff, boxing and CrossFit and yoga. And now people come in knowing about jiu-jitsu. And they, again, stuff like Joe Rogan, oh, I listen to Joe Rogan, or I listen to Jocko Willink, or I watch the UFC, or, you know, all these other things, to where now you're not selling people on jiu-jitsu. You're selling yourself of why you're the right jiu-jitsu gym for them, which makes it a lot easier and allows people to differentiate their brand or what they do that makes them special. And, you know, convincing someone, like I remember the old days of challenge matches where you had to convince this guy that his kung fu was not going to be valid here. And, you know, those guys, even when you did, they would never come train. Now, no one's like coming in and like, I don't think this choke stuff's going to work. It's more like, why should I sign up? You know, do you guys compete? Are you guys self-defense? Yeah. Are you, if I'm older, is it okay if I train? Do I have to? Which is a lot easier because, as we all know, if we get them in the door, jujitsu is great. And if you have a good personality, if you have a good product, jujitsu will often sell itself. And not having to explain that to them is a huge, huge positive for me and I think most gyms.
But at the same time, you mentioned something important, that there is a different chemistry between different locations and different instructors, different academies, right? And there is differences between Academy A and Academy B, and they could be literally in a close proximity, yet what they present, it could be drastically different from an experience perspective for somebody who's just trying, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. Is that good or bad?
Definitely. And I mean, I think it's good because you're going to have students who want different things.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of students who come in and they go to more traditional formal places. You have to wear a certain gi, you have to wear, you have to bow, you have to do certain things a certain way. You can't do no gi until you've been training 2 years. You can't roll until you've been training X amount of time. And I run my academy very informally, very laid back. And just because that's what I've always done, that's how I've always learned. That's kind of my personality. And some people want the structure. Some people want to say, I don't want to have to think about this. I want to have this gi so it's taken care of. I don't have to make a decision. I want to come in. I want to have a very set plan. I need to know these moves to get my blue belt. Some people don't. And again, the idea that they have that option. So one place doesn't fit you, go to that other one. And again, I don't claim my way is better than anybody else's way. You know, there's good ways for everything. And I want people that variety. And I want the people to come to me because they like what I'm offering and that they like my atmosphere. They like my personality. They like what our gym does. And again, I always tell people when they're brand new, if you've never done jiu-jitsu or they're moving to the area, try all the gyms in the area. You know, they're all good. There's pros and cons to all of them. Pick the one you like best or the one that fits your schedule the best, and you're going to have a good product. And I mean, I'm lucky none of the gyms around me I consider, you know, McDojos are bad. They just offer different things, and they're all good people. And, you know, a lot of our students cross-train. So I'm, you know, we're all one big community, and we're going
to
help each other.
But listen, what you're speaking right now is a very open-minded approach to all of this because we both know that there's – well, I'll just say some limitations to some of this. There's some instructors don't like that. Yeah. Some instructors are, well, you're saying more structured. Some instructors are more rigid on where you can train, who you can train, who you can exchange information with. And believe it or not, I mean, it doesn't matter. The point is this freedom of designing this to as you wish, in a sense, and creating your own environment is huge to the success, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's why, I mean, I'm lucky that I have a lot of students who have, chose to come train with us that have backgrounds that were already purple belts, were already brown belts, were already high level, competitors. And I've had people literally tell me, we had a new student who moved in, a few months ago, a brown belt coming from the West Coast, and he chose where to live in Chicagoland because he wanted to train in our gym, even though he'd never been there before, but he heard about what we do and how we do it. And I believe that's, you know, the thing about it is that's why our gym is special in that we have this personality that fits me and the people I brought. You know, I've had a small group of guys that have been with me from my day one. I have some students who've been training with me for 18 plus years. Like my first black belt, Brandon, I started training with him when we were in college at the University of Illinois in 2005. And he's been with me since 2005. And we, you know, there's a family environment and we're all together and having this kind of set special thing where we have our own unique thing. I don't have to follow a certain curriculum. I don't have to answer to anyone else other than doing jiu-jitsu the way I think. And I also think like it's produced very different results for jiu-jitsu in terms of like competition. I've had the luck to have some very successful students. And I think a big issue or a big part of that is because we've always had a very open-minded approach to learning and teaching. And we've done things kind of outside the box. And then this newer generation of students I have kind of proven what we've been doing on a bigger scale. Because when I started doing some of the things I do now that are a little bit different than most gyms, especially 10, 15 years ago when I started, you know, some people would come in and be like, well, why do you do it this way? And I'm like, well, I think in my experience, this is a more beneficial for me and my students. But until you have that proof in the pudding, people can just be like, I don't know.
Well, you're the first one, right? So like nobody believes the first guy. It is what it is.
Exactly. And I don't say my way is the best way, but it fits me and my students. And now the, you know, it's coming to fruition. So I was glad I could stick to that and not have to fall and say, well, I think it's better to do this, but the customers don't agree. So I have to go back to doing what everyone else is doing. And again, that's why I think has made our academy and our program unique is we don't really do things the way others
do. Was that by design from the very beginning or was there a point where you were like, hey, this isn't working out doing it a different way and you wanted to have this newer approach?
From the beginning, because I was always a kid who I wasn't the best athlete in the gym. I was not generally somebody who was like, I was young. I was out of shape when I started. I didn't know anything about jiu-jitsu. So I got my butt kicked all the time. And then as I got better, it was just by showing up more, doing things differently, listening to coaches, but then trying to make it fit my way. And when I started teaching a lot in college, I noticed that, you know, the way I was taught, I was lucky that I had some very kind of ahead of their time instructors, especially for being white and blue belts when I started and they were teaching. But they were smart guys, engineers, people who were kind of creative, people who came from different backgrounds. And instead of doing things the way sometimes we'd go to a seminar with a famous jiu-jitsu guy who's showing good stuff, but it was very old school and there was kind of no creativity or you have to do it this way. I was always kind of told, hey, if it works, try it. You should do it that way. So when I wanted to run my own program, I was doing things like I loved doing no-gi back in the day. And no one really did no gi. It was like you trained gi and you took off the gi to do a tournament, or maybe you took it off for a week to do a fight. And I was like, well, why, if I like no gi so much, why don't we do gi and no gi together and split it? And why don't we train leg locks more? Because I'm good at leg locks, but leg locks are, you can't train them. They're bad. They're not real jujitsu. I'm going to teach guys the leg lock because I'm good at leg locks. And, you know, things like this are like, one of the things that makes our academy different is we don't have beginner's classes. We've never had a beginner's class. Every class is all mixed levels. Other than some competition classes. And even those, once you have 6 months, you're allowed to come to those. And the idea being that we didn't have a ton of students at first. And I was like, well, if I differentiate beginners and advanced guys, because most of my students were blue belts or purple belts who were starting with me, like these beginners are going to have no one to guide them. And I'm only one person. But if they come in with my more advanced guys, it's like they have six extra instructors on the mat. And we've carried that out now to where like I'll have a class with 15 black belts in it. And then three people, it's their first night. And they're all working together. And I think it helps them progress. And again, not saying some of the best gyms in the world have beginner classes that works for them, but it was just something I wanted to differentiate our gym with. And it's worked really good. And it's created this kind of unique environment that my best competitors interact with my newest people from day one, where I have friends who train at gyms. And they're like, oh, so-and-so trains there. Oh, I've never seen him once. I've never met him. I don't, you know, and it's like, well, you guys train in the same gym. It's like, well, he trains at that class. I train in this class. We don't even know who, you know, it's like we've never even seen each other. So we always wanted to do things a little outside the box.
There has to be a certain level of satisfaction behind what you are describing. I mean, very innovative approach. Some would say one of the kind, very creative, very open-minded. And now after these years of, well, let's just call it experimenting, there's the fruits that you're starting to collect. I mean, you're talking about some of the students having a lot of success. You as an instructor and the academy owner, I mean, this has to bring certain level of satisfaction to you personally.
100%. Like, I was a pretty good competitor and fighter when I was coming up. And, you know, I'm proud of all what I did on the mat as a competitor. And I still compete and will be competing. But like as a coach, I'm so much more proud of when I see my students win. You know, if I never compete again, if I never win another match, but my students continue to get better and win and reach their goals, both on the mats, off the mats, accomplish things personally, you know, lose weight, stop drinking alcohol, gain confidence, ask for a job promotion, ask a girl out, all these things that they say jiu-jitsu has helped them with. I'm so much more happy with that. And, you know, watching some of my students compete at the world level and win world titles and win PANS titles and Masters World titles. And, you know, that's way more fulfilling than anything I've ever done on the mat as a personal level. You know, like my wins and losses, I don't really care about, but watching my students, especially the ones who came from nothing, had no idea what they were doing. And now they're some of the toughest people and the most dedicated athletes I know. I mean, it's just, nothing makes me
happy. Why is this? Why that is so satisfying to you as a result versus what you have done?
Because when I found jiu-jitsu, I watched the early UFCs, like a lot of people back in the 90s, saw Hoist Gracie, I said, I want to do jiu-jitsu. And, you know, my parents were like, what are you talking about? You're a little kid. You've never really done anything like this. But I just had this deep desire to want to do it. And I fell in love with my first jiu-jitsu class. I told my parents, I want to do this for the rest of my life. And I just fell in love with the sport and it changed my life. It got me in shape. It, you know, gave me confidence. It created so many friendships. It allowed me to travel the world and meet all these great people and pay my bills since I've been out of college and all these other things. And it was always that when I was just competing, fighting, it was always about me. That was a personal thing. And it was like, okay, I love this sport. And I tried to tell people MMA and jiu-jitsu is going to be this big thing and you guys got to check it out. And people would be like, you know, what are you talking about? Guys grappling around. How is this going to be popular? And, you know, I could try to convince all these friends I grew up with, and none of them trained and none of them would try. And then when I had the opportunity to like start teaching and seeing that I could show other people how this could change their lives and how it changed my life and how it's made me so much of the person I am. And if they were able to embrace it and I was a good guide for them to help them understand what was going on and to make it less intimidating and more fulfilling and, you know, give them just a good foundation where they could be their own person, but make jujitsu theirs. And then I've seen my students open academies. I've seen my students become teachers. I've seen my students create programs, and just seeing how much, you know, things that have come from just this personal deep down love that I wasn't sure why it was so much and like where it would take me in life. And to see now that it's, you know, again, almost everything I have in my life now comes from jujitsu. Some of my closest friends, my income, my ability to do what I do is for everything comes from, you know, walk into that jujitsu academy as a 15-year-old kid and falling in love after my first class and, you know, just keeping that passion and that love for it ever since.
People who don't train jujitsu often don't understand what you are describing, walking into a class and completely submerging yourself in not only the activity, but then you're talking about paying forward or paying back, whichever direction you want to slice this. Now you're talking about, you know, owning a business, making a living off of this, and then impacting others and creating next generation or generations and really looking out forward. Like if you hit way back in the day, like that 15-year-old Jeff or 20-year-old Jeff, have you thought about that this will be your life?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I told my parents I'm going to do this the rest of my life. And when they said, well, what do you mean you're going to do this the rest of my life? I was like, I want to teach jujitsu. That's what I told them after my first class.
Okay. I want to know what the conversation was. What did they say? I want to know that conversation.
Well, I mean, my dad, who was super supportive, you know, I wouldn't be here without my dad. Like, he drove me to all those classes and waited outside in the parking lot and picked me up and drove me those first couple of years. He was just like, he was a very firm advocate of doing what you wanted to do. He was a steelworker his whole life. He hated his job, but it paid the bills and allowed us to have a home and do what we did. And his one thing he told me is, I want you to do something that you love to do. I don't care if it makes money, because eventually if you love it and you're passionate about it, you can be successful. He said, his only caveat is you have to get an education. So if it doesn't work, you have something to fall back on. And they were super supportive from day one. They said, you know, if you want to do this, you know, they let me fight MMA 10 days after I graduated high school, my first professional fight. They drove me to tournaments. They were always my biggest fans and supporters, both my dad and my mom. But from day one, they were like, if this is what you want to do, we're going to hold you to a high standard. So like they signed me up for jujitsu. And obviously when I was 15, they were paying for it. They're like, if you sign up, you got to go every day that there was a class. So I went to every single class. They dropped me off, picked me up. And they said, hey, you know, and as long as I'm putting in the work, they're going to be supportive. So,
but many people. Many people will listen to this and they will be like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's not so rosy. You know, it's not unicorns and rainbows all the time. Like, you know, you got lucky. You know, this happened. These conversations, you know, like you, I'm sure you hear this too, but like this is what the common response will be, right?
Yeah.
What's your answer to all of this? Because we both know that there is a lot of grind behind getting to where you are today. From 15 to today, we're talking about more than two decades, right? Nearly three, right? Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But nearly three.
Yeah, 26 years,
right? So that's a lot of grind. And it doesn't appear to me as there was a point of this is going in a different direction.
No. I never once wavered on this was what I was going to do for myself. But again, it's hard work. But again, anything you're going to be successful at, if you're going to go to law school and be a lawyer, if you're going to be a professor in a university, if you're going to be a doctor, if you're going to be a construction worker, it's all hard work. But if you're going to put in a hard work to something you don't love and you're doing it just because, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money because I've heard finance guys make a lot of money, even though I hate finance. Or, you know, I'm going to do this because I've heard it's the cool thing or it's what I, you know, that's where the grind really wears on you. Where the grind we have, like I have a physical grind on my body, 26 years of grappling, fighting, competing, cutting weight. But again, I still on the mat every day and I feel great. I know I'm healthier than the vast, vast majority of people my age already. But like the mental grind has never really been an issue for me because this is what I chose to do. No one made me do this. No one made me said, you have to open an academy. No, I could just graduate college, had my degree, still trained for fun. Okay, I'm going to go get a corporate job or go to law school or grad school or these other things. But that was never even in my mind because, you know, and I, of course, when I started teaching, people were like, don't turn your passion or your hobby into your career, because then you might lose both. You know, I was warned that constantly, like, oh, if you do this. And I told him, I was like, well, that's true. And for some people, that is the case. But, you know, if I don't make this, I don't do this or have the chance to try this, I'll never be able to live with myself. And, you know, from day one, I would just show up and teach. And I got so much satisfaction, whether one guy showed up to my class or 40. I just love it. And, you know, again, finding that passion and embracing it. And I think because I was able to, again, open my own academy and not have to be like, you have to show up and you have to teach this on this day. You have to show up and do this for somebody else. It was always, it was going to be predicated by my success, by me doing the work. And then now I'm at a point where I have obviously people help me and people are building with me. But it was, you know, from day one, it was like, it was my success or my failure. If it failed, there was no one else to blame but me. If it was successful, it was going to be on my shoulders. And that passion is what kept me going.
And, you know, that passion is so visible. And, you know, we were lucky enough when you surprised us with a visit just a few days ago. But I do have to tell you, you're one of those guys that, you know, walks in that room and everybody smiles. You know, you bring that energy to the room, you know, and so the passion is extremely visible, even after all this time. How do you do it? Like, how is this possible after 2+ decades, you're still loving what you do?
Well, I mean, perfect example. So I was at Roll with my one of my students, Chris Bochick. He was teaching a seminar. And, you know, as a coach, getting to see one of my students become not only, I mean, Chris is one of the best competitors in the world and one of the toughest young grapplers on earth, but he's becoming a phenomenal coach. Yes. And to be there and watch him coach. And, you know, I've seen Chris coach a million times at my academy and do things, but to go somewhere else where, you know, he's not in his home environment and he's getting to see and not working with his home students and getting to see him teach and the passion he has and the knowledge he has and to show that. And that, again, what we're talking about, that's what I love to see is like, as much as I love to teach, watching my students teach and like watching him teach this stuff and teach this high level world-class jujitsu to a group of people with different experience levels and different backgrounds and pass on some of the things that, you know, I worked with him, stuff he's come up with his own, some he's trained with some of the best grapplers in the world to bring back. Nothing could make me happier than that. So like being on the mat with friends, being in a fun environment with, you know, watching something that I helped build and watching the confidence and the knowledge Chris has brought to the table is, you know, it makes me more energized to keep doing what I'm doing because I'm seeing that next generation. And I know there's going to be another group of Chris's that he's going to help create that I'm just going to be able to be even more proud of down the road. And that's where the passion is going to keep building as opposed to dissipating. It's just going to keep building and getting bigger.
Is that difficult for you to step back and allow one of your students to take over in a sense? Like I know just from experience knowing people, you know, sometimes stepping back is difficult. Sometimes this is what you've done. I mean, you've been the highlight of your academy for decades, right? And now you have the second generation coming along, which obviously is a post product of your hard work. But at the same time, they can't shine unless you step back. And that's every leader experiences this at some point or another. Do you find that challenging part of stepping aside?
No, I just realized that the more people who are from our lineage, our team, our family, people who are going to be good people, who are the people I want to represent our, you know, this family, this group, this team, whatever you want to call it, that's how things are going to get bigger. Me as a singular person is something. And again, there's things that I do well and there's things that I'm very confident in. And then there's things that my students do better than me and that they've surpassed me at. And like a perfect example with Chris again is, last year, 2 years ago, he released an instructional with Jiu-Jitsu X with Keenan, and like it was on it's called Sloth Style Leg Locks, and it was basically the leg lock system I'd built for a long, long time, and then with Chris and some of my higher level students who really embraced it when they decided they really want to jump into professional no-gi and kind of modernize it and bring it all into a system, and I had a few guys tell me like, well, why are you letting Chris like put out an instructional? You know, it's a lot of your stuff, and I'm like, well, no one knows who I am outside of Chicago. Chris is winning at the world level. I'd much rather see people learn from some of the unique things we're doing. And, you know, then and now why would I hold him back and say, don't do this or don't put this out because this is mine or I helped you do this. And that doesn't help anybody. I want him to grow. I want people to learn the stuff we're working because they see that what we're doing is kind of different than what everybody else is doing. Because our leg lock system was all self-taught for the most part. I didn't learn it from John Donaher. I didn't learn it from other people's instructionals. So I want that to get to the masses. And again, I'm just a 40-year-old black belt in Chicago suburbs who, outside of a few small people, no one really knows or cares about. But if other people can learn about what we're doing, that helps everybody grow. It helps Chris get to the bigger, you know, a bigger stage. And, you know, that's what my job should be as a mentor and as a coach, is to do things that are going to push my students ahead, both on the mats, off the mats. And again, it doesn't hurt me. It only makes everything in the bigger scheme of things better.
For those of you who are listening and you not sure who Jeff is talking about, take a look at the or take a listen on to the episode 188. That's with Chris. We just had him on the show literally recently. What a great story. So why so many people struggle with that? Why so many people struggle with letting go and having the succession plan, having the next generation to take over? I mean, so many people hold on to that knowledge, that's one, to that power, that's two, to that ability to tell people what to do. Like, that's so visible in the world today.
Well, I think in jiu-jitsu specifically, I think the issue is that there's this old adage in jiu-jitsu: there's no ego in jiu-jitsu, or leave your ego at the door. And I completely agree at a base level. When you come in and learn, you got to realize you don't know anything. You got to realize you're going to get beat up. There's so many people better than you. But as you get higher level in the sport, especially if you're a competitor, you have to have ego. You have to believe you're really good. You have to believe you have something to offer. You're better at this position than your opponent. That's how you're going to tap them out. You're in better shape. And I think a lot of the top jiu-jitsu guys and guys who run academies, they have this ego from being a world-class competitor or the head of the academy or the teacher. And obviously it feels good to be in charge and people to be under you. And the problem, I think, is when they get to that point, they start, you know, not wanting to take a step back, both physically, like in on the mat, losing to a student. So they don't want to necessarily share all the information. They want to keep some things, stay ahead. They want to keep in that like hierarchy where I'm ahead of you no matter what. Even though if you maybe are getting past me physically, I'm your coach. I'm ahead of you. I'm in charge. I'm the final say. Where like for me, like my goal is if all my students train as hard as me, they should get better than me and they should be. And, you know, if I'm doing my job well and I'm teaching them well and I'm not holding them back, I want all my top competitors to be able to tap me out and tap me out regularly. Not because I'm letting them or like, oh, see, here's my arm. You caught me in an arm bar. I want them to just go, if we roll hard, they're catching me as much or more than they're catching me. My job is to make them better than I was. So the only way I'm going to do that is by sharing the information, giving the ability to do things that help me. Like I started to get better at jiu-jitsu when I started teaching more. So if I hold back and don't let them teach, if I don't hold back on technique, I'm showing them. If I hold back with knowledge from them, I'm only hurting myself, because in long term, I'm going to be holding my students back, which holds up the whole academy back. And I need to realize that if I'm doing my job well, I need to be able to delegate and say, hey, I'm going to be out of town this week. I want you to be able to teach. Or, hey, we want to open another class. I need people who are confident and really have the skills to teach. And it doesn't mean, oh man, I really like to go. One of my black belts who teaches a morning class for me, Ramsey's. Ramsey's a phenomenal instructor. I don't want people, I'm not worried about, oh, I like Ramsey's class better than yours, so I'm going to take yours. Good. Ramsey's awesome. You should go train with him. And if you can fit your schedule and you want to learn from him, it's going to make everybody in the gym better. Not like, oh, if he teaches this better than I do, or these students like it, who cares? Like, he's my student. And again, he should be getting better than me. And if I'm helping him get to his path, both as a coach, a training partner, or a competitor, that's his job. And it's my job to make them better. And down the road, if something happens and I can't teach anymore, I want to have 20 great people who can do it as good or better than I did it. That's the whole goal.
And this all sounds great. And let me, you know this already, but I share the same philosophy. I mean, I embrace the succession plan. I embrace sharing everything, full transparency, and getting the next generation to be better than us. But yet, jiu-jitsu community is not always the same. Like there is this notion of not doing that for whatever reason it is. And does that slow down our evolution of what this sport truly is becoming or growing towards?
I mean, I think it does a little bit, but I think overall that's happening less and less. I mean, you're seeing it every generation of top level, like in competition, like as a base, because it's the one thing we can really look at. You can't look at how good of a teacher is in a class environment. Like what does that mean on a broader scale? But you look at the competitors. Competition is much higher now, and the level of the competitors is higher now than it was 5 years ago, 10 years, 15, 20. So we're seeing the knowledge is getting out. The students are getting better quicker. And to the point of like, you're having more and more people open gyms. And, you know, again, if we have quality people opening quality gyms, that's because coaches, heads of academies, head of affiliates are passing this knowledge down and are allowing these people to open up. Now, some are, again, way more, you know, oh, you're opening an academy as an affiliate, but you're going to listen to me and I'm going to run that academy, even though it's not my academy. And there are those people. But I think those are the outliers. I think more and more this community is realizing, because there's such a network of people who can help you and good people in this community who are willing to, you know, give knowledge, cross train, help, give ideas, help academies grow, that, you know, if you're stuck in a relationship with a coach that's not giving you that, you can find good people out there who can help you. I'm lucky that I've had a lot of people come to me, not even students of mine or affiliates of mine, but people are just like, hey, I respect you. I respect what you've done. Can you help give me any advice? I'm always there for people because, again, I want jiu-jitsu to grow. And if you're not able to access some of that knowledge and some of that ability to, or some of that kind of passion that, you know, a coach is like, oh yeah, you can open an affiliate as long as you pay me this much money and that's the only help I'm giving you, man, again, that's not good for that student or that the jiu-jitsu community. I don't want people going to academies that are only run that way. So, you know, you can make it out there to where even if you're not getting it the way you want necessarily at home or from your academy, there's still help out there. You know, there are so many good people who will help you, just because if you're another passionate jiu-jitsu guy, again, it's kind of a brotherhood. It's always been that way. Anywhere in the world I've gone or my students have gone, they've gotten treated well. We got people who come here from all over the world. We all get treated well. And again, it doesn't matter what affiliation you are, what patch has on your gi.
The community is strong. Gary, did I cut you off? I know you.
No, he kind of answered it in a roundabout way, but I think that, you know, that closed-minded aspect of years gone by, is it because instructors and coaches actually train with their students, which you don't see in other sports, right? They're not physically hitting in football. They don't have skates on, you know, in hockey. And I'm just wondering if, you know, if that is what causes those frictions or that closed-mindedness.
I definitely think so. I think a lot of these guys don't want to lose to their students. Even though they want their students to be a world champion, they don't want to lose to that same student. And it's like, we had Kurt Osiander, you know, legendary old school black belt. He came into town years ago to do a seminar, and me and him were at dinner. One of the things he always jokes is, his thing is like, I'm teaching a bunch of snakes on how to bite me. And if I'm doing my job well, they're going to bite me more and more often, and I'm going to get hurt more and more. And, you know, some instructors don't deal with that well. Some instructors, again, they want to be the king of the castle. They want to be on the roost, and they want to be like, I'm the best guy here. And then what happens is either they don't share knowledge or they just stop training altogether and they kind of sit off to the side. And then they're like, I'm the best. You know, if I roll with you, I tap you, but like I got an injury or this and that. And again, obviously some guys really have injuries and you can't roll with everybody, but it's like some of these guys, that's where they do that. Ego just takes over. And then there's like, I can't lose to a student in front of me. One of my students sees me get tapped. Oh, they're not going to train. It's like, dude, most of my students who've been with me a while have seen me get tapped and seen me get tapped quite a bit. There's some good people who come on our mats, both our students and from other places. And, you know, I'm not Hickson Gracie, so you're going to see me get tapped. And I've never had a student not train with me or quit or want to leave because they saw me get tapped out.
You talk about a lot of team building and really passing on that knowledge that you've been building for 20 plus years, especially here in the area of Chicago, local to us. Do you find yourself as one of the pioneers of jiu-jitsu in Midwest?
I don't know what pioneers would be. You know, I don't know. You know, I just feel like I've been around a long time and I've helped a lot of people.
Well, let me rephrase. I think you're sugarcoating this because how long you've had your academy? How long you've been teaching?
Just about 16 years.
16 years. Academy. 16 years. When you opened your place, how many other places were there?
Man, I don't know, maybe 10, 12.
How many
like
places are there now?
In all Chicago.
Hundreds?
I don't even know. There's gyms. I'll have a student say, like, hey, I have a friend who moved to this area. Have you ever heard of this gym? And I'm like, no, how are there this many gyms?
I feel like there's a new place opening up every week. That's how I feel about it.
Exactly. 100%.
But even, you know, jokes aside, you've been the sloth jiu-jitsu, the seraphim jiu-jitsu has been around for a very, very long time. Yeah. You have to feel as a part of it. Like I feel like I look up to you. I feel like I'm a rookie when it comes to doing this, when it compares to you. Like, you've been on around the block for so long, and yet I feel like you're one of the less appreciated in a sense of visibility. if you know what I mean.
Well, you know, I think part of it is because of how I came up. I felt like there was a group of the guys, like when you started, we all started, that I was one of the few guys, and still am one of the few guys in Chicago in that this area that wasn't a Carlson guy.
Yeah.
So I came up and luckily I had the opportunity to train with Carlson Senior a little bit because I'm really good friends with Miguel Torres. Me and Miguel actually started together at the Academy, Braulio Corral's Academy. And when Miguel started training with Carlson Senior, when I'd be home from college, he would bring me up and we'd be training for MMA. So I'd stop in, but I was never like a Carlson guy. So like I'm outside of that lineage where so many guys, whether it's Mark Vives at New Breed, whether it's you or all these guys, they have that those Carlson tentacles to where like, and which is amazing. Obviously, Carlson Senior is one of the legends of the sport, wouldn't exist without him, and Carlson Jr. and all these guys. But because I was on the outside of that, I was never, you know, in that ingrained in that part of the community. And I was young. So when I was like, when I started fighting MMA and I was going to corner fighters, I was 17 years old sometimes. So I couldn't go to this fight because it was at a bar, or I couldn't go to this venue because I wasn't 18, or, you know, all these things to where like I was always kind of just off to the side because I was a young kid. I was always the youngest guy in my gym. I was always the youngest person here. And then when I went away to school and I was training with my coach, Jack McVicker, down in school, I was away from Chicagoland for a few years. And that's when I started really fighting MMA and coaching a lot. So I was in Central Illinois, and you know, if you thought Chicago didn't have a lot of jiu-jitsu back then, Central Illinois definitely did not have a lot of jiu-jitsu back then. So yeah, it was just like I was always on the periphery, even though I was training and competing with and fighting a lot of these same guys. So I always kind of feel like, even though I've been in the community forever, I've always felt like a little bit of that outsider because I wasn't part of that Carlson family, or even later the Comprito when he came here. There were all these big names that were kind of where the kind of the hubs were. And I was always on the outskirts doing my own thing, which again, it helps me build my own brand and my own identity. I didn't have to fall into that Carlson lineage or that Comprito lineage or that Gracie Baja lineage. We had our own lineage. We did our things our own way. And I think that has always kind of kept me into like, you know, I wasn't trying to be famous. I just wanted to teach jiu-jitsu and have fun. So if people would find me, great, but you know, that always kept me a little bit different.
I think that's the refreshing part about you, is that this almost I don't care attitude, in a sense of it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter where you come from. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter what rank you wear, or what brand you wear, or what patch you have on, or what your past is, or like, it just doesn't matter. Just come and train. And there's really not many instructors who embrace that approach. And I think that's really was refreshing here.
Well, what's funny is like, I always tell people, like my coach, who I got my black belt under, Jack McVicker, he's a coach. He's one of the most accomplished jiu-jitsu guys in the world. One of America's most accomplished ever. He just won his 14th black belt pants title just a couple weeks ago. He's won Masters Worlds like 10 times at black belt. He medaled at the adult world championships in brown belt. I mean, he's a 12-time black belt no-gi world champion. But no one outside of a small group of guys know who Jack is. He's never done, like literally back, you know, I've had multiple people reach out to me because he's not really big on social media. Be like, hey, we have a podcast. Could you have Jack on? I'll call him and be like, nah, I don't like to do that. Yeah. I don't want to promote. He doesn't promote. No one knows about him. He's in Terre Haute, Indiana, and Champaign, Illinois. He doesn't really care. He doesn't put anything out there, like other than just here's a clip of my class. I promoted this guy to blue belt. He just does his own thing. He's always just fought at the highest levels, competed constantly, produced high level competitors, done high quality jiu-jitsu, and just did it in a way that like, same thing is like, I love martial arts. I've been doing it my whole life. I'm going to pass it on. I like to compete. I like to teach. I like to travel. And other than that, I really don't want to do anything else. And he was never like, you know, when I started my academy and I, of course, asked him for advice, and he was never like, oh, you know what you got to do is marketing this or social media this. Or it was just like, give a good product. And he's like, the main thing you need to do, show up regularly, learn everybody's name so they know you actually know who they are, care about who they are, and give them and just give them good energy and they're going to be with you. And that was the kind of thing where, you know, and Jack's been that way for the whole time I've known him, that he doesn't ever worry about that stuff. He never worried about, you know, oh, you know, I'm an affiliate under him. You got to pay me this much a month, or you got to run your gym this way, or you got to, it was just, hey, you're a student of mine. I love the results you're doing. I love the energy you bring. I love having you represent me. That was it. So that was kind of a top down thing. And, you know, again, Jack has never cared about who you are, where you're from, making him more famous, making him more money. It was just kind of like, let's do jiu-jitsu.
I love that part. I mean, I love that part. And you mentioned some important things from an instructor perspective, being approachable, knowing names, knowing being empathetic, you know, showing them that they really care. Do you think that those are the important points after so many years being in business?
100%. Like I take, you know, I have a, you know, obviously our academy has grown a lot over the years, but I know every single person who comes in my door. I can tell you their name. I can tell you what they do. I know if they have families. And it's like, I'm not doing that just so I can do that. I mean, these are my friends. These are people I care about. And again, I want them to be successful on and off the mats. I want them to learn. I want them to love jiu-jitsu the way I do. I want them to get the benefits they can on. And one of the things I'm really big on is I want a community where people come into the gym and obviously you're going to try to beat each other up. That's what we're doing on the mats. But I want people to care about each other off the mats. Like this earlier, like last year, two of my students got married and I got to be the officiant of their wedding in Arizona. And half the wedding was our jiu-jitsu team. You know, who flew from Chicago to go to Arizona to go to this wedding. And it was mainly, you know, our jiu-jitsu team and the audience and with their, you know, significant others. I got to do the ceremony and like that's the kind of thing, like I never trade an experience like that again. And it's like, oh yeah, this team has a lot of jiu-jitsu people. They're good, but like they just train each other up and they go their own separate ways and don't care about each other. I'd much rather have a smaller group that really cares and that, you know, you really create this connection with, and, you know, you're there for each other when tough things happen. Then just, you know, I have an extra 50 students who pay me monthly membership, but I don't really care about them or know who they are, or they don't, you know, care with, they're not friends with each other. That's not the business.
Quick story about Jeff. I went to a seminar at your old location where it was kind of nondescript. Looked in the window, saw that's where it was, but somebody was coming with me and they weren't familiar with the area. They were lost. So I was texting them and it was a crappy rainy day and Jeff comes running out in his gi. Gary, and we'd only met once before. Are you lost? This is where we're at, where I could see a lot of other people just looking out the window. Like, what's this idiot doing? Like, we're right here. But no, everything we're talking about,
Gary, he felt bad for you. Okay.
I know,
it's right? Raining old guy outside. I mean, there's a responsibility that he has.
Yeah. But it's just,
That's true.
And it's funny, everything we're talking about, like if you don't know where Evanston, Illinois is, it's a college community. It's a diverse community, which leads me to thinking about your own, you know, the sloth community. It's diverse. Mm-hmm. It's eight different ages, different colors, different religions, different backgrounds. And it's amazing that, you know, all these things are intertwined and not by design. I don't think, you know, it's like, it unfolded in front of you this way. And that's just a testament to what you got going on and the people that train under you or with you.
We have a joke like that. Like I've been had this academy, you know, 16 years. I've never had to kick one person out of an academy, which, you know, I think is a great thing because so many people, one of the questions I always get is like, what happens when you have to kick somebody out? I was like, I don't know. I've never kicked anybody
I'll
out.
I'll let you know when it happens.
And, you know, and a big thing about it is like, it's kind of a self-regulating system and not that like, oh, if somebody comes in, we're going to beat them up and they're going to leave. It's just like, if people come in and they don't vibe with our attitude and kind of the gym and the culture, they're just not going to stay. And again, they got plenty of good places, like we talked about, to train other places. And then we get a lot of people who, hey, I tried gym X over there out and, you know, I like jiu-jitsu, but man, they're a little bit like kind of extreme for me. They're a little, you know, meatheaded-ish for me. Man, I like your gym because I just feel more relaxed and calm. Great. Those are the people we want. So it's very much like myself and my original kind of assistant instructors and the guys who kind of been with me from the start, guys like Brandon, Ilya, some of my earliest students, they have very similar attitudes and very similar outlooks. So you just bring people in and, you know, my earliest student group was very diverse, different ages, sizes, shapes, backgrounds. So whoever came in kind of wasn't like, oh, I'm the only guy who's like this. There were always somebody different, you know, to somebody else that, oh, I'm not a one of a kind here. There's a lot of different people here. And okay, this guy is not exactly the typical jiu-jitsu guy. And this guy, or this girl's not the typical jiu-jitsu girl. So if they can do it, I can do it too.
So after all these years grinding and doing what Jeff does, we are at this point where new location for you is starting and or is building as we speak, right? Yeah. And first of all, when is this coming? I know so, it's layers to all of this, but
yeah, we don't have an official opening date, but we'll just say this, you know, we're right here in beginning of spring in Chicago and we're hoped to be in doing soft open and start teaching classes in about 6 weeks.
Good. Well, that's awesome. That's awesome.
So
let me ask you this. Why did it take so long for Jeff to have a place that you look. And if you guys haven't seen what Jeff is doing, you need to look this. Like go on his social media, because I look at your new place and first of all, you deserve what you're about to have. Like that's in my mind. Like I think you are one of the more underestimated people in Chicago. That what you bring to the table, you have brought to the table, it's kind of been, I don't know, ignored in a sense, right? And I think a lot of this comes from this very relaxed approach that you have. But at the same time, I do believe that there is certain reward that should be given to those who work hard. And I kind of, in a sense, I'm looking at this in that sense. Why did it take so long for you to have that place they look and have?
Well, basically, from the start, I didn't really care where I trained or taught as long as I had mats and a roof and a bathroom. So I was always in the idea of I've talked about my original academy when I trained when I was a kid at Bradley Correll's gym. We shared space with a karate gym. My coach Jack in college, we had to roll mats down into a racquetball court in the basement of a fitness center. And at night we have to roll them back up and move them. So it was never about, you have to have the nicest mats or the nicest facility or the nicest this. It was just, we need mats and a place to train. And so when I started, obviously I started in an old boxing gym in Evanston where I started my program. We had a room with no windows that had old wrestling mats that had been left there. And we started with two students and just kind of slowly built up. So, when we moved, that location closed, we moved into a smaller, storefront spot, the spot Gary was at. And the same thing was just, we got some mats, threw them in an open room. And as long as we had mats in an open room, we could build an academy. And, and now Jim Hennessy, who's one of my brown belts, he came with this idea. He wanted to build this super facility. He is semi-retired from his actual job and decided he wanted to build something special and he wanted to make jiu-jitsu the backbone of it. So, it's kind of his brainchild. And it was more just like, hey, do jiu-jitsu, bring a jiu-jitsu program over there and I'll take care of the rest. And, obviously I want your feedback on things with naming and ideas and what we want in and what things we're worried about. But it was more like, you put in the sweat equity in 25 years of teaching jiu-jitsu. I respect it. I love what you're doing. I want to build something special and I want you to be in it. And it was just, it was kind of COVID allowed it to happen because we lost our location and gave us the freedom to kind of do what we wanted. And so, now that it was the right time, right place, just everything worked out. And now we're building something that we are super ecstatic to show the world in the next few weeks to months. Cause it's like nothing anyone's ever done in the jiu-jitsu or martial arts.
Well, good for you. Before. Good for you. I'm really happy about it. I was telling Gary about this. I'm stoked about what's about to happen because I think that again, in some way, this is a way of, putting Jeff really in a visible format. Like, I think you are so humble. You were just, you care more about jiu-jitsu than everything else. And building that facility and building the team that you have done over last few decades, this is good stuff. This is good stuff.
Yeah. We're excited. I'm just I feel like you're kind of saying this is kind of the fruition of a lot of work. And it's like, we're going to finally have a showcase to show what we feel we bring to the table as a school and the gym and as a team. And it's something that's going to bring a lot of people who wouldn't have saw us before out there. And it's going to make a destination for people to come train with us, which is obviously super cool. And, I think more people are going to hear about the gym and that's going to allow us to find us. And like I said, I think we have a really good thing to offer. And, this is going to be the thing that differentiates us from the other. Like we said, there's so many gyms down in Chicago. And again, for the vast, vast majority of them are good gyms with good people and they all do their thing. But we know we now have a differentiating factor as opposed to just a slightly different way we teach jiu-jitsu or a different atmosphere. We're going to offer something to students that no one else can get, no one can copy, no one can duplicate, which is going to just be, it's going to be a fun thing to have and it's going to be a fun thing to see how the community responds.
Good for you. That's awesome. Is this another chapter for you or are you looking at this as just another milestone, another day in the office?
Well, I just look at it as I'm going to have a much nicer office to do what I love to do, So, the goal is one of the things that I stress is just because we're going to be in a new, really cool environment and really state-of-the-art this and that, it's not going to change how we're teaching jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's not going to change what we do. It's just going to be, again, the people are going to come in. They're going to have more things that they're going to be offered. It's going to be a cooler environment. They're going to think, we have things that you know, we're going to have cryo and we're going to have saunas and red light therapy and sound bar immersions and all these crazy things. And it, what I feel is more than anything, it's going to bring people in the door who don't know what jiu-jitsu is, don't care what jiu-jitsu is. But when they see that the same people who's taking a hot yoga class or going to do cryotherapy, and they see what jiu-jitsu is and they meet the people on the team because, oh, you know, you were both in the sauna. Oh, what do you do? Oh, I train jiu-jitsu here. It's going to expose it to so many more people and allow people. And then blend those jiu-jitsu people are going to try new things, have access to things they didn't have access to. And, you know, our whole goal with this new gym facility is building a community through wellness and fitness and health. And whether it's, you know, the jiu-jitsu people, yoga people, kickboxing people, recovery people, personal training, and we want to make a big group that realize, hey, if we all have this dedication to these different things, we can all be one big family and help each other and network with each other and really just have a cool one group that even if you never trained jiu-jitsu, that doesn't mean, you know, you can't have fun and interact with and form relationships with our jiu-jitsu team because we all share the same space and the same environment.
I think big point that we are highlighting this entire time, this entire conversation is the sense of community, sense of cohesiveness between complete strangers at some point, and then, yeah, then they turn into almost a family in a sense. I mean, family is part of community, right? So is that what goal of jiu-jitsu is for you? Creating this connection, you know, these relationships?
I think that's the goal of the academy. I think the goal of jiu-jitsu is to build confidence and, you know, better physical health and better, the ability to defend yourself and all the, you know, all the normal things that you think of jiu-jitsu. But that's where jiu-jitsu as a general just jiu-jitsu, the art of jiu-jitsu is for that. And I think the academy is about building that community, building that confidence, building a next generation of leaders of the community, helping people, you know, find who they are, find what they need in life, find in deeper connections. One of the biggest issues you hear about all the time in the modern world is how disconnected people are and they're living their lives online and that they don't have real friends. And, you know, if you get away, you start a job or go move away from college where you're not forced to interact with these people, how many men and women who are 30 years old and have no real physical interaction with anyone in a real life. And they don't know how to do it anymore. And it's like, jiu-jitsu is the perfect way to bridge that gap. Because you want personal interaction, you're going to get all the personal interaction.
Oh, you get personal, right?
It's super personal. And if you can get past that early stage of how awkward and how intimidating it is, and you realize, man, if I can go to this gym and I can get choked and smashed by this person, you know, going out and talking to someone at a bar or going up and talking to someone at a coffee shop, isn't that scary?
Yep.
And it can build, help you build that connection. And just having those people, hey, I want to go grab a coffee with you after. Let's talk. Oh, you know, went to law school. I always wanted to think about going back to law school, but let's talk about it. You, what is your advice? Where you wouldn't have that connection without it. And that's what it really is. And building that connection and building that confidence to make more connections, that is really, really crucial. I think that's one of the most beneficial things, especially in this time we're at now, that jiu-jitsu and a good academy will do. So I think that it's going to be a crucial thing to have places like jiu-jitsu gyms or a, you know, a yoga gym or a CrossFit gym. And I obviously just think jiu-jitsu is something that, because it's so immersive, that you're much more likely to do it long-term than some of these other hobbies that people kind of fall in and out of. And not that some people don't with jiu-jitsu, but the amount of people I know that have been doing jiu-jitsu a decade plus is so much higher than most people have done other hobbies like a softball league or CrossFit or these other things. Because again, this pursuit of the belt, the next level, the keeping the relationships really keeps people in the
Yeah, goal. I often say, and Gary knows this, but I often say jiu-jitsu is the only sport where you come in with a smile, you get choked out, you leave with a smile, and then you come back for more and you pay for all of this.
Well, I mean, I always tell people the story. And my first day of jiu-jitsu, I'm 15 years old, never done a day of jiu-jitsu in my life. I'm out of shape, haven't played sports in a while. I watched the UFC since I was a little kid. I love the UFC. We find a jiu-jitsu place, I call, set up. My dad takes me there, comes in, signs a waiver. And, you know, my parents were very pro. They're like, hey, we're not staying here. We're going to go. We'll pick you up an hour and a half when the class is over. You know, you got to be able to handle this by yourself. I'm the only kid in the class. Everyone's an adult. Everyone's in there as a fighter. And my first class, we do some technique. And I don't even remember, probably like an Americana from the mount, something simple. And we start to roll. I've never rolled before. I get choked unconscious.
Your first day.
My first roll.
I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah. And of course, like, I'm fresh meat. I'm terrible. I don't know what I'm doing. A guy I roll with wasn't even drawing, trying to be mean. He had trapped my arms and he put a cross choke in. And I didn't know how to tap with my feet or snap my fingers or do these things. So I'm trying to fight. I go to sleep and I wake up and I'm looking at the ceiling. No idea what happened. And, you know, I didn't think anything weird of it. I just assumed this would happen every day. I didn't even tell my parents because I didn't think it was anything. Oh, yeah, I got choked and got beat up. And I look back that if I would have maybe told my parents, like, oh, yeah, I got choked unconscious in my first class, that might have been the end of my jiu-jitsu career. But, you know, and looking back now, if one of my students choked a trial person, like in their first class unconscious, like I'd be, you know, one, I would never let that kind of person roll with a new person, especially if they're underage. They've never trained before. And I'm sure I was a spazzy white belt, but I mean, I was terrible. I couldn't do anything. And by that point in class, I was so I was so tired from doing the calisthenics and the technique. I couldn't even have been going that hard. And I don't think the person was trying to hurt me. I think it was just like, oh, he'll know to tap some other way because right. His arms are trapped. So, and again, didn't dissuade me from training. I walked out happy and ecstatic. So even getting choked unconscious doesn't necessarily dissuade you from having that smile going in and going out.
What a great, I had no idea. I did not know this story about you. That's a great story. Look at you, Gary.
What?
See, Gary, stop complaining about things.
I don't complain about anything. Nothing. Nothing.
Jeff, as we creeping up to the 60-minute mark, what we do at the end of every episode, we have a question for you from our previous guest. However,
okay.
She didn't know who's going to be answering it. So think of it as question completely in blind. Gary's going to take a lead on this. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, this is a good question. This is from Rose Miller. And Rose wants to know, if you could implement one rule or take something away from all jiu-jitsu academies, what would it be?
Uh-oh.
No, okay. I just want to preface. Are we talking about like a technical rule? Like we're not allowed to do
anything.
This?
Or just anything? It's either. It could be cultural. It could be technical.
Anything goes. But it goes across every academy in the world.
Okay. That's a tough one because
you're going to piss off a lot of people right now.
Well, no, I was going to say, we're lucky that I got, there's no rules like in my academy that I don't like because I made my academy the way I want. So like a lot of the rules a lot of other academies have, we already don't have. So I'll do two. I'll do a technical one, like that's not going to upset anybody, that I think is a good rule. And then I'll talk about a cultural one. So technically, there should be no jumping guard. Jumping guard is the most dangerous thing in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I don't think it should be allowed other than it's like a high-level, pro-level show. I've seen so many injuries where people have their knees blown out. And that maliciously, it's too dangerous. So no jumping guard. Again, pull guard all you want, sit guard all you want, but no jumping guard. So on a technical level, I think that should be implemented in competition, training, all those things. And I think one of the rules that I would say, I think is, and again, a lot of gyms have this rule. I don't have this rule. I've never had this rule, is I do not think there should be any hierarchy in terms of who's allowed to ask who to roll and who's allowed to turn down roles. I've seen this happen where a guy, you know, a visiting blue belt at some academy asks an upper belt to roll and then they get beat up because they asked the brown belt to roll or a black belt asks the blue belt to roll and the blue belt says, no, I'm tired, and they get mad. It's there's times I don't want to roll around and it's nothing personal. And there's times where there are people I don't want to roll with because, you know, maybe I'm tired and I have a bad knee and you're 295 pounds and vice versa. And again, I'm a firm believer in jiu-jitsu. I've just been doing jiu-jitsu longer than my students. I'm not a better person than them. I'm not, you know, at a higher level. They don't need to bow to me. They don't need to call me anything other than Jeff. So like the idea that they can't ask me to roll, I can tell them no. And sometimes I do. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm just not feeling it. I'm taking today off. But like that rule, I've seen it lead to so many fights or people getting green lighted or beat up. And I'm just like, you know, like we're all training partners, you know, like there's no one here who's that much more special than anybody else. So I don't think anybody should be getting in trouble or beat up or getting yelled at for asking to roll or being turned down from rolls.
I love it.
Love them both.
And it would be a simple, easy rule.
Yeah, I love it. This was great. This was great. I thought you were going to like change the world with one of them. Like,
well, you know what? I mean, like I said, there's a lot of rules that I find in other academies. I just, like I said, I'm lucky. We have that rule. Anyone can ask anyone to roll. So like all the rules that I don't personally think are that fulfilling, we don't have those. Like every time we have somebody.
But that particular one, I actually strongly agree. I actually remember way back in the day when I was a white belt and I actually wanted to roll with higher belts. I always found the desire to learn from somebody who's better than me. I mean, maybe it was like a desire to get destroyed or something, but I always found it very, very stimulating to me. And I got turned down so many times at the point that where at some point I stopped asking because it was very discouraging in a sense. Of like every time everybody tells me no.
Well, and that's one of the things I always tell people, like they come visit our academy who are higher belts. I'm like, it's not disrespectful. And I, if you find it that way, I'm sorry, but like, this is just our culture. And that's, like I said, we don't have beginners classes. So my white belts trained with black belts from day one, and they're just seen as other training partners. And like, we don't even line up or anything. So like, we're one of those gyms that like, we just start training, like everyone's kind of just in a circle on the mat and we start training. So there's never a hierarchy in our gym. And so it's like, my new belts never understand that if you go to another gym, you may have to line up or you might not have these rules. So like, they don't even know like that that's a thing. So like, you know, it's always that way. Like from day one, it's just like, as long as you're showing up to training and you're not a jerk, you're just equal to every other person here, whether you've been here a month or you've been here for 8 years. Because again, we're all people. We're just doing jiu-jitsu. We're wrestling in pajamas with our friends. Like, this is not like life or death kind of stuff. And again, when it becomes life or death, like if you're defending yourself in the street, rolling with more advanced people is going to help prepare you. And as a higher belt, rolling with a spazzy white belt is going to help you, because that's the person you're going to be fighting in the street. So we should all be rolling with everyone.
I love it. I love it. Jeff, as we slowly coming to the end of this amazing conversation. If anybody wants to find you, I mean, you know, your new location is coming up just a few weeks away. You know, are you available on social media, websites? Like, where are you at? If anybody wants to connect with you directly, dig in or visit, yep. Or where are you at?
You can find us at serafinjiujitsu.com website. You can find us at serafinbjj on Instagram. My name, Jeff Serafin, on Facebook. Instagram's probably the easiest way. We seem to have a lot of interaction on that. Our new gym is going to be opening again soon. It's going to be, this is kind of actually, you guys can have a kind of a special story. We've never officially announced our new gym's name.
Are you going to announce this right now?
We'll tell you guys.
Where's the drum when you need it?
we've officially cleared the name through legal, because we kept having some issues with some of our previous names. So our facility is going to be called 1801. Because our address is 1801 Central Street. So we're coming with just a cool, very modern name. So like, our website will be like Gym 1801, but it's just 1801 is going to be the name of the facility. It's just going to be a very kind of high-end specialized space. So we wanted a kind of a cool, unique name.
I'll ask you right off the bat now, because everybody's going to start thinking that. Is Serafin Jiu-Jitsu fading into 1801, or is Serafin Jiu-Jitsu will continue existing?
Well, yeah, we're Serafin BJJ. The jiu-jitsu program will still be Serafin jiu-jitsu. It's just the facility is 1801.
Yeah, I like it.
We want the facility to have its own identity, because again, we're going to have, you know, hundreds of people in the gym, and not all of them are going to do jiu-jitsu, and not everyone's, you know, we're going to have personal training, sauna, yoga, all this stuff. And as much as we want people to try jiu-jitsu and experience it, we're going to have, you know, 50 people who are only doing yoga and doing nothing else. We're going to have people only come there for personal training. So we don't want to intimidate and be like, oh, this is a jiu-jitsu gym that happens to do other stuff. We're a gym that happens to have jiu-jitsu as the backbone, and it's kind of the main component of the overall wellness that we're doing. So Gym 1801 is going to be the gym, and then we'll still be Serafin Jiu-Jitsu. We'll still have the sloth, all that good stuff. We're not taking away any of that.
Gary, sounds like a trip in the very near future for both of us.
I'm going to break the news to you and Margaret right now. Margaret and I are moving back to the northwest side of the city, so I can be closer to 1801. I've given the south suburbs eight good years of my life. I'm out of here.
Okay. So I see this where this is going. Yeah. Jeff introduces this you was to, all to Raw, and to now Jeff takes you away from IC.
Sorry, Jeff. Now you're stuck with me.
Hey, we're gonna need some good employees and people to help with the program. Wow. And we're gonna have an apartment up there, like this really cool high end apartment that we're gonna
use. I love it. So, Margaret works in the city. I think her commute just got cut in half. It's good stuff, man. I'll talk to you on the side.
Yeah. I see this episode is hitting all kinds of.
Somebody's got to escort me out of the building though, because I'm gonna get my head kicked on the way through.
All right, 1801. I love it. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It was a great time. Great connecting with you guys. I'm glad I got to see you guys a few days ago.
It was a great surprise.
It was a great surprise.
You were coming with Chris. I
had no idea. What a great surprise.
Well, I told him earlier, because one, that way I knew he'd have an uke, and I like to see watch him teach. But also, you know, on a side note, one of my best friends, his son Emmett is training with you guys. And I wanted to come see Emmett on the mats for the first time. And, you know, I loved seeing him so excited about jiu-jitsu. So I wanted, you know, to come and see him before the seminar too. So it hit two things.
When I saw Emmett that day, you know, I was like, did you see who's up front? He was like, So it was awesome.
Yeah.
Jeff, one more time. Thank you for being here. And thank you for sharing your story. I really, truly appreciate what you've done for Chicago, for Chicagoland, for jiu-jitsu community, but your impact often, I think, is underestimated, and it's so huge in the last couple of decades that thank you is not enough. But I appreciate you being here and sharing the story.
Well, thank you for having me, and thanks for those kind words. Again, I love seeing what you guys are going down there, and, you know, both north and kind of south of the city, we're going to keep the jiu-jitsu community getting better, more professional, more open to everybody, and, you know, it's a effort for a lot of us, not just one of us.
Gary, awesome. before you get fired,
before I hand in my resignation. Listen, Jeff knows how I feel about him. I've told him, and I've met quality, amazing people through Jeff. We didn't talk about Gen Z today. She's wonderful people. And Chris, you brought up, and then Craig, who introduced us, right? Or kind of put us together a little bit. Amazing. The community is what it's all about. And that's the way I feel, especially after having started this later in life. The support, the sharing, all that stuff that Jeff has got going, I think just bleeds over to everybody who meets him or anybody who's trained with him. So I have to thank you for that. And I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for Jeff getting back to Craig within 30 seconds of me asking where to go train. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad. And again, I love to hear those stories because the amount of times I've suggested people to gyms or jiu-jitsu who never even showed up one time, when somebody does and then it helps change their lives, that makes it all those hundreds of times that were wasted worthwhile. So I truly mean that.
Thank you so much.
All right, guys, let's wrap it up for today. Great conversation. And Jeff, we're looking forward to seeing the amazing things you are about to do. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, I look forward to having you guys up there. And I just want to say shout out to my wife, Ellen, and my son, Brody. Every time I'm anything, I just want to say shout out to them. I would not be here without them, and they're the inspiration to work for those people. So, always shouting out my love to those
Beautiful.
People.
Awesome.
All right, man. Let's wrap it up.
All right, peace.
Later.
See you guys.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.